We're News Talk 1590 KVTA Ventura.
The following is a paid program. Gold Coast Broadcasting is not responsible for its content.
M. Spence receives additional compensation for his participation during this paid program.
It's time now for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. Now, here's your host, Colin Fluxman.
Don't take your love.
Yes, it certainly is. Breaking up is hard to do, especially when you're faced with the prospect of having to pay spousal support. And that's the topic of discussion today with attorney Lisa Zonder, paralegal Sharon, financial guru Steve Wagner, and some input from our Streetwise technical producer Tom Spence. Welcome all. It's going to be one heck of a show today, that's for sure. Lisa, starting with you, what is the purpose of, very controversial in many cases, spousal support?
Well, that's a good question, and there are a lot of answers to it. The reason that alimony is awarded, generally, it's evolved and continues to be a moving target. It's something that's in flux. And it's really questionable whether the marriages people have today resemble anything like our grandparents' marriages were. There's no real consensus as to the modern policy of awarding alimony. It's really unclear. I can tell you about the history for just a second. Common law notions were that a wife gave up her rights and even property during her marriage. And after the marriage ended, she had no way of supporting herself. So even with no-fault divorces and women out in the workforce in the 1970s, as we continue to evolve here historically, there were still women who are financially dependent. And so the notion was now that we still needed to ensure that the dependent spouse could survive and be self-supporting. So there's also an allowance that existed to compensate that sacrificed earning capacity that the women gave up if she devoted herself to domestic duties, for example. So that's kind of taking it from common law notions to the 1970s, and then fast forward. So in 2005, the court told us that and clarified the reasons for alimony. The public policy reasons in California were moving away from having lifetime alimony awards to having an award instead that permitted the spouse who was receiving the support to become self-supporting. So now we're just looking at awarding alimony to give that spouse an opportunity to become self-supporting. And so I would say, you know, we can look at assisting economically dependent spouses, compensating them for loss of earning capacity, and especially if a couple had decided that there was some value to having the wife stay home and devote her time to domestic duties or raising children.
Does it, and this is just something off the top of my head, obviously depending on the age of the spouses and the age of the children. So if it's a young mother, for example, and she's got small kids, the divorcing dad will have to obviously support the kids and perhaps compensate for not being there and pay his ex-wife.
Correct. I mean, that's exactly what alimony tends to do.
Right. You've been practicing law for two decades, and I'm sure you understand the perspective.
You're making me sound old, Colin.
Of both the person who was frustrated at having to pay spousal support, or partner support as the case may be, as well as the fear of an unemployed spouse who needs support desperately.
Yeah, and that's, again, another emotionally charged topic and, frankly, controversial. If we look at spousal support and or alimony or maintenance or whatever it's called from the lens of the person who's having to pay the support. I've had many clients, whether they're physicians in the biotech industry, engineers, airline pilots, and they get really incensed and worked up when they find out that, you know, either from the internet or their friends tell them that they're going to be paying a boatload in spousal support when they go through a divorce. And if you think it hurts professionals or, you know, people with some money who are well-heeled, it hurts even more for the, you know, low or middle-income worker, you know, because then they have to divide up a very small pie. If you flip it and look at you know, alimony from the lens of the recipient. You know, obviously that's a very different, if you're in those shoes, you're in a very different position. Because if you're the lower income earner and you've been in this marriage and you stayed out of the workforce or you reduce your career trajectory just to be able to raise the couple's children or support your spouse's career, then I hear from a lot of those clients, you know, almost on a daily basis, how fearful they are. I mean, you just hear the fear, you see it on their faces. They come in crying, you know, good thing we have the tissues on hand, you know, because they talk about the sacrifices they've made, and then they wonder, you know, how am I going to be able to afford housing for myself and the children?
Yes.
And what would I do without the spousal support? And, you know, it's also an emotionally charged issue from both sides. So once the marriage breaks up, it's one of the stickiest and most expensive issues that we really find in divorce cases. And it's how long will we be paying alimony and how much will I owe? And I find it's a lightning rod issue. And what I mean by that is just the emotions, the sheer emotions. I mean, every kind of anger and hurt gets played out a lot in the arena of spousal support and deciding
right.
how to set that.
So how do you plan financially to provide for spousal support?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it's just part of the divorce process, and with a mediator or the courts will make that decision. But at the end of the day, if let's say you're a professional that has, say, $10,000 of monthly income coming in, you may end up having to give away 40 or 50% of that to your mm-hmm. ex-spouse for an undetermined amount of time,
right.
potentially for the rest of her life.
Well, as the song goes, right? Instead of breaking up, I wish that we were making up again.
Well, they say it's cheaper to keep her calm for that reason, right?
Well, Lisa, how is temporary spousal or partner support calculated while the divorce is pending?
So for temporary or pendente lite spousal mm-hmm. support, which is our fancy Latin words that we like to use in court, what the purpose of that is we're trying to preserve the financial status quo of the spouse who needs the help to the greatest extent possible. And so we have guidelines here in California, and generally what we follow in California are the Santa Clara County guidelines. And those were established in the 1970s. And the basic guideline is just a rule of thumb that I always give to clients in cases when I consult is, and then of course we run programs that actually, there's software that actually does the calculation for us. But temporary spousal support is generally 40% of the net income of the person paying or the payor minus 50% of the net income of the payee. So 40% of a high income earner minus 50% of the low income earner is another way to look at it. And that's adjusted for tax consequences. And again, if there's child support, then the temporary spousal support is going to be calculated on the net income not allocated already to child support or child expenses. And in California, what I was saying earlier is we use DisoMaster, which is a software program, but there are also other programs like Support Tax. And there are free calculators online. People can go to the California Department of Child Support. They have calculators as well. And these orders that you're asking about, whether they're by agreement or following a court hearing, these stay in place until the time of trial or until the parties have another agreement that they reach as mm-hmm. to post-divorce support. And just by way of general information about temporary spousal support, the general consensus is that in most cases, the post-divorce spousal support, meaning what happens at trial, generally you're going to get a lower amount than you get in temporary support. I call temporary support like a Band-Aid support. And so often by the time the divorce is ready for trial, it could be 1 to 5 years off, depending on which county you're in. So in Ventura, your trial might be within a year or sooner. But in L.A., due to the sheer volume of cases, it's going to be a ways off.
So who applies for this temporary support? Is it the wife or the person starting the action? How does it work?
Right. So after the petition is filed, whoever needs the support is going to apply for it. Generally, you're not going to make an application if you're the higher moneyed spouse. So mm-hmm. if you're the high income earner, you're not going to put in an application because you're going to end up having to pay support.
Right.
So if you're the lower income earner, generally you're going to want to talk with an attorney and make sure that you're eligible, and then you'll make a decision about whether to file for spousal support.
Is spousal support taxable?
Well, there is a silver lining for the person having to pay the spousal support. It is tax deductible. Of course, it's tax deductible to that person, but taxable income to the recipient.
Right.
So if you're getting it, you're paying taxes on it. So that's one thing that we look at. In the DISO Masters, those software programs that we use in our office, for example, they tell you what your net's going to be after you pay taxes on your support. So you can see your net position, especially if you need to budget and prepare, to be able to prepare your budget and forecast
right.
for your living expenses.
But that's only if you're filing separately, right? Not if you're filing jointly. There's no tax relief.
True.
Right. So how do you go about setting spousal support at trial as
yeah.
part of the final divorce?
Yeah, that's very different from setting it on a temporary basis, because on a temporary basis, we're using those types of software programs that we talked about and using that rule of thumb of 40% of high income earner minus 50% of low. So for permanent spousal support, the court's not allowed to rely solely on a DISO master or support computation like the software we use. Instead, they're having to do a balancing test under Family Code 4320. And the purpose there is to try and assist the supported spouse so that they can maintain a standard of living that's similar to what they had during the marriage. But the goal, anyway, is for the spouse to become self-supporting to the greatest extent possible. So you can't rely on the DISO Master software if you're the judge, solely on that anyway. So when it's being decided, what the judge does is consider a list of factors that are developed in the state of California, and lots of other states have factors too.
What are those factors?
And this is more like weighing the scales of justice, and it's not really clear what the weighting is on these things. And they balance the interest of the following factors, like marital standard of living. Were you lower class, middle class, upper class? What are the current incomes of each of the spouses? What is the earning ability of the spouse who was requesting support, or earning capacity, as it's called? Did someone stay out of the workforce to support the other's career or attainment of a professional license? What are the needs, obligations, and assets of each spouse? How long was the marriage? The court's going to have to look at all these things, earning capacity, an ability to work without interfering with taking care of children. And also they'll look at the extent to which the person who's requesting support was the victim of domestic violence perpetrated by the other spouse. So there are, lots of factors that are being looked at here on a permanent basis.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa's Zonda Style on AM 1590 KVTA. If you'd like to send us an email on this topic, feel free to send it to Lisa@DivorceTalkRadioCalifornia.com. Lisa@DivorceTalkRadioCalifornia.com. We'll be happy to respond to your emails. Check out our website as well as Facebook and Twitter.
Are you and your spouse contemplating a divorce? Divorce is very stressful and can present a minefield of obstacles. Lisa Zonder is a divorce attorney and mediator. She can help you through this process, providing a number of alternatives to court, such as mediation and collaborative divorce with a professional team. Lisa's main office is on Townsgate Road in Westlake Village. She also serves mediation clients in her satellite office on Camden Drive in Beverly Hills. One call to Lisa will set you on the path to a peaceful and economical resolution that is focused on your family. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. Contact Lisa Zonder today, certified family law specialist, State Bar of California, Board of Legal Specialization. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. If you mention you heard it on the radio, your first consultation is free for local and qualified clients. Call 805-777-7740. That's Lisa Zonder, 805-777-7740, or email lisa@zonderfamilylaw.com. Consultations are granted based on appropriate qualification as determined by Lisa Zonder. Her practice is limited to family law matters in Ventura County and Beverly Hills.
Lisa, if the law requires the judge to balance equities like you described, how can you give your client any sense of predictability as to what support might be paid by him or to him or her?
Yeah, that's kind of a dangerous thing to do, if we try to predict outcomes, given what I just told you, as to post-dissolution spousal support. Instead of giving a prediction, I put my crystal ball away, and instead I try to focus on relaying to the clients our experiences, what we see happening in court, what's in the rearview mirror in terms of, my work at the courthouse, when I do the settlement officer work, when I'm mediating privately in my office, cases that I've litigated and taking to trial, talking with my colleagues. So we point out to clients that spousal support is a more unpredictable issue than most, and I find myself also pointing out that even though the temporary spousal support is somewhat formulaic, the post-dissolution support, what the judge does at trial, or the long-term spousal support award, it's really not a science. And that's really hard, especially for my more linear clients who are engineers or scientists or physicians. It's really hard to relay that, yes, we just have to let the courts take the scales of justice and balance as they will. There's a lot of discretion that the judges have, you know, meaning they get to pretty much decide unless you take them up on appeal. I mean, their decision is going to be applicable. So it's an art form, it's not a science, and each judge has a different lens. What I can do to give some predictability to clients is to bookend for them and give them some rules of thumb like the following. They ask me, what's the length of spousal support? So I can tell them as a general rule that spousal support's gonna last for half the length of the marriage in a marriage that's less than 10 years. So for example, if you have an 8-year marriage, you can probably expect to pay support for about 4 years. So that just gives them an idea of the duration or the length of support. But in a longer marriage, the court's not going to set an alimony duration. It's really confusing because lawyers get caught trying to explain what it means when the court says, I'll retain jurisdiction in a long-term marriage. It means we don't know the answer as we sit here today. It's going to be the burden is going to be on you, the person paying the support, to come back to the judge at a later time and prove that spousal support is no longer needed for the supported spouse. And that's really a hard, bitter pill to swallow as well. So it's left to the discretion of the courts, but also the courts, this is a little bit of solace, they don't favor lifetime awards of alimony anymore.
And I think that's a great point that a lot of folks are not aware of. And a lot of these, and we'll just, again, be stereotypical here for a minute, these women that are the recipients of alimony need to set aside some of that for a rainy day. They have to view that as income, as if they were out there working, and setting aside a part of that, investing it for their future, because the day may well come that alimony, that check monthly will come to an end.
So what kind of financial planning are we looking at?
Well, it's budget planning. It's going right back to the very basics. And some of the, you know, there's an article written by an attorney some time ago, Lena Gillen, that talked about 10 mistakes that people make. One of them is not setting up a budget. Before, everything was kind of put together in one pot, and you just kind of relied on your spouse to handle everything. Now you're on your own. You really should know where your money's going. So, you know, this is as important as the divorce proceedings and settlement. Once you know what your amount's going to be, you need to set up a budget and stick to it. And part of that budget needs to be setting funds aside for your future.
And also one other thing, Steve, quickly, I would point out generally to clients that because they're going to be taxed on the spousal support, they should kind of, you know, do something to escrow those taxes.
That is a great point.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to sit down with their accountant and end up probably paying quarterly taxes.
Like this requires a great deal of discipline, yeah. Right, obviously, when having to put aside money and plan your finances, a great deal of discipline. Are there measures that people can take to discipline themselves? Are there certain things that you would recommend or advise? Because it's like a New Year's resolution, very difficult to hang on to.
Well, necessity is the mother of invention. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the principle here. You're in a situation where you must survive now, so you just absolutely have to force yourself. One thing that will help you do that is to seek out the advice of a financial planner, investment advisor, because they
such
generally
as yourself, right?
Well, sure, or you know, anybody qualified. I mean, any certified financial planner would be great because they're trained in all the major areas of financial advising, including budget planning and investment planning. And that may all be what you really need to do to get you motivated to stick to the plan.
Right. Lisa, does the court get to consider indiscretions or fault based on conduct when setting support?
Generally not, except that they can consider domestic violence. So, you know, they're not going to look at conduct because it's a no-fault state, you know, affairs and things like that. But they're generally also not going to award support, spousal support, to a spouse who has acted extremely violently toward the other spouse. In fact, there's a recent case from 2012 called Marriage of Freitas, where the trial court said you must consider documented evidence of any history of domestic violence. And there's also a statute, 325 of the Family Code that talks about if there's a conviction for domestic violence in the past 5 years, it creates a rebuttable presumption that affects the burden of proof that there's no spousal support award to be made.
Domestic violence as far as spouse on spouse.
Correct.
Nothing to do with the children.
Or
right?
It could be the children, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Could be the children. But I want to go back for 1 second to a point from earlier, just before we started talking about, when we were talking actually about the permanent support or what I call the post-divorce spousal support. The mindset among the lawyers, accountants, and commentators, people are out there always looking at spousal support, scrutinizing it, reassessing the viability of alimony. And people ask, you know, is there any kind of predictability around permanent spousal support? And the answer is there isn't at the moment, but there are some guidelines or rules of thumb that you know, culturally we were following, at least in my area of practice, which is that the post-divorce spousal support is generally lower than the temporary support. So instead of being at the 40% level, generally it's going to reside between the 30 and 40% level, depending on the balance of the equities. So that's something that I tell people, you know, to help them achieve a negotiated settlement. That's something that they can think about. And we'll talk a little bit also today about some of the states that have adopted formulas with deviations for special circumstances. And so as an example, in Michigan, there was a family lawyer who developed some software years ago that used some algorithms and gave some different weights to the various factors for setting the post-divorce, you know, post-trial alimony. Obviously, we don't use that as the sole measure, the support, DISO Master Support Calculator that we have here. But other states, people have been trying to figure out if there's just something formulaic that we can put in or, you know, allow for some deviations or some different weights on different factors, and just to be able to figure it out to make it easier for people so they don't have to guess at it. And it's expensive to go to trial on the issue of alimony, so it would be nice to have some more predictability.
Under what circumstances, if any, can spousal support be modified?
Well, modifications can happen for a host of reasons, like a job loss, because obviously you couldn't be expected to continue making the same support payments if your income is reduced. But unless the couple has a written agreement not to seek changes in the spousal support, either one of them can request a modification or a termination of the payments if there's a material change in circumstances. So that's really the standard in California, is there has to be a material change in circumstances. So if there's no agreement stating otherwise, the spousal support is going to terminate on the death of either spouse or on the remarriage of the recipient. So if you get remarried and you're, you know, receiving support, you're going to generally lose your spousal support. It's pretty well commonly known here.
And
Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the death of the person sending the alimony. It brings into question another very important thing that's generally done but sometimes overlooked, and that's making sure that if you're the recipient of alimony, make sure there's life insurance on the payer.
Excellent.
The
what about a claim against the deceased estate? Can that be made by the
the
recipient?
That's exactly why you would keep life insurance in place.
But if there weren't life insurance, could you still make a claim?
Generally, well, it depends on what exactly is in your agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you secured it.
So you mentioned in modification that there's a change in financial circumstances. What happens if it's only a temporary? For example, somebody loses a job and it takes him 6 weeks to find another job. What does he do in those 6 weeks that he cannot make those payments?
Generally, you can go to the other spouse or his or her counsel and ask for a reprieve and some consideration to set it at zero temporarily, or depending on, you know, I would say zero, assuming you have zero, but some people have unemployment benefits through the federal government. Other people have investment income, dividend income, so it really just depends on what other income is available.
But you have
not everyone is just dependent on a job.
Right,
yeah.
But you've got to come clean. You've got to say, okay, this is what has happened. I've lost my job. I still have some income, so I can give you some money. It takes, obviously, negotiation between the two parties.
It does. And if, you know, it's a significant loss of income, let's just say, hypothetically, you went from $1 million a year to zero, and you don't know what your employment prospects are, you might actually go to an attorney and think about filing for a support modification.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. Feel free to send us email if you wish, any question on what we're discussing or any other issue on divorce or finance to Lisa at DivorceTalkRadioCalifornia.com. Lisa at DivorceTalkRadioCalifornia.com.
Going through a divorce is never easy. It's not only emotionally draining, but the many financial decisions can add to your stress. For over 25 years, Ventura-based Stephen Wagner, certified financial planner of Wagner Financial, has been helping people just like you make smart decisions when emotions can sometimes get in the way. From planning your retirement income to investment management, Steve Wagner can create a roadmap that you can understand and follow as you embark on your new life. In addition to providing clients with access to informative financial content and useful tools, Wagner Financial will make you feel more confident about your financial stance now and in the future. Call 805-339-0760 for an appointment. That's 805-339-0760 or log on to WagnerFinancial.com. For that one-on-one personalized financial attention, call Steve Wagner Financial on 805-339-0760. 805-339-0760. Stephen H. Wagner is an investment advisor representative with Transamerica Financial Advisors, as well as securities and investment advisory services offered through TFA, member FINRA, SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. Wagner Financial is not affiliated with TFA.
I understand that a few states are working to reform spousal support. For example, Florida is undergoing reform concerning permanent alimony, but the bill hasn't become law yet. Do you have any idea about the reforms Florida is pushing for?
I looked at that just a little bit, and I realized that they're in the process of launching reforms, and I think the bill didn't pass in summer, but they're looking at that again. They're looking at a massive overhaul of the existing alimony statute in Florida. But what they're trying to do now, as I understand it, is the proposed bill, as it sits now, would change the definitions to show that a marriage of up to 11 years is short-term. So they're kind of redefining what's a short-term marriage, what's a long-term marriage, what's a medium-term marriage. So they are now saying that a marriage up to 11 years is a short-term. Between 11 and 20 is going to be a medium-term. And 21 and up is a long-term. And under this newest proposal that they're floating, as I understand it, there's going to be no alimony if you have a short-term marriage. So if you're under 11 years, you're out of luck. And that there would be no more permanent alimony or that lifetime support that we talked about. Also, there's another major change that is the establishment of alimony guidelines. So now the new proposal is to limit alimony in short-term marriages to 25% of the gross income of the paying spouse, 35% of the gross income in a medium-term marriage, and 38% in a long-term marriage. So I think there are just a lot of proposals floating out there in a variety of states. There are actually some really interesting articles. I'm flipping to it quickly. There's one called The Divorce Spousal Support Calculator, an Alimony Formula Resource by Kelsey and Trask, it looks like, in Massachusetts, where they actually do an overview of the reforms and the alimony statutes, and they look at Massachusetts, they look at Arizona, California, Kansas, Maine, Pennsylvania, Texas, Virginia, and other states. So it's a pretty huge study, and it was done in late 2011. So this is really a very charged topic, and a lot of people are looking at that right now.
Yes, I would imagine. Sharon, you have some understanding of the Massachusetts reform. What kinds of reforms were implemented there?
I do. Just to go back to Florida for a second, I have a little interesting story where this gentleman, a businessman, was going through a divorce for quite a period of time and couldn't settle on the spousal support at all. And of course, the wife was a stay-at-home wife and hadn't worked for a number of years. And he was sitting at his desk one day and he was contemplating what he's going to do. And his attorney said to him, well, you know, the wife's attorney said was sitting there and he said, well, you can sell the jet ski. He said, I've already sold that. He said, what for? Sold to pay your fees, he said to the attorney. He said, what about the IRA account? He said, I distributed the IRA card half to you and half to pay the property taxes. And he said, what about the James investment account? He said, again, half to you and half for her living expenses. And he said, what about the 16th century French hutch that we have? Sold to pay your fees, he says. And eventually, after a while, he decided that the Mediterranean villa his wife was living in, he was not going to pay the mortgage, so it went into foreclosure. His business, unfortunately, suffered, and he was facing bankruptcy because it was underwater. And at the end of the day, after many, many dollars, and 4 or 5 years of fighting this divorce, they both worked out that they have lost millions, wow, really. And he just said all over spousal support, which he said was ridiculous. It's unbelievable. Anyway, the good news is there are reforms coming in a lot of states, which is really nice, especially in Massachusetts, which I believe has passed. Long-term marriages, alimony will end at retirement age, which is great. 5 years or more, 50% of the number of months of marriage. 15 years or less, maximum alimony is 70% of the number of months of marriage. The second husband or second wife's income and assets are excluded from any spousal support calculations. Cohabitation suspends, reduces, or even terminates alimony. So if you're getting alimony and you decide to cohabit with somebody, you can lose that. And then
that's happening in California?
We should say
Massachusetts.
Sharon is talking about the new reform in Massachusetts that just passed in the last,
yes,
what, year or two?
Yeah.
And in California, there is a similar statute already on the books about cohabitation, because that does, it creates a rebuttable presumption if you're living with a new boyfriend or girlfriend that you don't have the same need for support. So it may actually be reduced or eliminated in California if you're cohabiting with someone. And that's already, that's what Sharon saying,
yes,
just made it into law in Massachusetts as one of the reforms.
And then the other two things, a second job or overtime income is not included in spousal support, which is ironic because in California that's definitely taken into account.
It's so hard to know if that's a good or a bad thing, because, you know, it depends on how many which jobs are you cobbling together. If the first job is a minimum wage job and
right,
the second one actually is developing some sort of, you know, internet-based business that makes a lot more money, it's kind of questionable. How are you going to exclude the second income?
Yeah, that's a gray area for
kind
sure.
Of, yeah.
And then, as you know, life insurance, rather, is mandatory for spousal support. So payment of the life insurance premium, usually by, say, the husband paying the ex-wife, the husband would pay the life insurance premium as security for her for the spousal support, but that can be deducted from the spousal support in Massachusetts, which is a big thing, because depending on the age of the parties, the life insurance can be very, very expensive. And then also, just to briefly tell you, good news, the alimony laws are really under review and changing. Colorado is doing some changes, other states, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, and you know, the retirement age, as in Massachusetts, limits it. But I also think in California, the retirement age is a bit, I think we should extend that, simply because people are living longer and nobody can afford to retire anymore at 62 or 65. If you're living into your 90s, as we are, you know, we have longevity now and the stats prove that, how can you sustain? So I think,
I think we should also give that a little bit of context. So in California, case law suggests that the natural age of retirement is 65, even though the federal guidelines now are different for Social Security retirement age. So for me, being younger than some of the people who got to retire at 65, for me, I think my retirement age is going to be more like 67, 68. So that case probably will get come under review, I think, at some point. So that's kind of an interesting.
So good things are coming down, right? This is what we're looking at.
I think so.
Yeah, I think the system, I mean, we often have this discussion with a lot of our clients and opposing counsels, and I think the system is a little bit broken in certain aspects, and I think in the spousal support largely. I mean, I understand that you've been a stay-at-home mom, or you've been a housewife and you haven't worked, but all of a sudden you're 65. You know, your ex-husband is not your financial plan. I'm correct in that, Steve.
Your husband isn't. That's right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so you need to, it's a sad emotional thing you're going through, but you need to get up, pull yourself up, and carry on with life, which brings me to this wonderful little story. Recently, this woman wrote her story, Alimony, Really? And she said the third time she was in court in front of the judge fighting for her own car, she said she had enough. She said, Your Honor, all I want is my name back. Please finalize this divorce, and I will take nothing but my name back. And she said the power that statement gave her spirit was immense. She walked out of the courtroom that day feeling so much pride and knowing that she had the power and the strength to live on her own without him or his money. So, you know, we're strong women, so let's get through the emotion and then deal with life on our own.
I think that's easier said than done, because when you're in a divorce situation, right, and I'm sure a lot of people who are listening are in that situation right now, will say, well, that's great. We have to get on with our lives, move on, and do something about it. But when you're faced with the reality of the divorce and the financial situation, it ain't that easy.
No, but that's where a professional mental health therapist will come in and help you during the spousal support, because I think that is so emotional. And men and women are usually, generally, stats will show the women are more vindictive. And I think that's where the mental health professional will help them to determine, you know, what is business and what is emotional.
And that's all part of mediation, right, Lisa?
It can be. As part of our mediation, we do work with, as part of an enhanced mediation, I would say, we do work with mental health professionals. And sometimes even in our litigated cases, we will send clients to vocational evaluators or job counselors. And the purpose of that is to help them rehabilitate and get back into the job market. So I think it's an important thing to give people the tools that they need so that they can become self-supporting.
Send us an email if you have a question, lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com. And this is Divorce Lisa's Under Style on AM 1590 KVTA. I'm Colin Flaxman, and in the studio, as usual, Lisa Zonder, our divorce attorney, Steve Wagner, financial guru, Sharon, paralegal, and Tom, we haven't forgotten about you, and I'm sure you're going to have a question or two for Lisa towards the end of the show. We'll be right back.
Have you already filed for divorce and are overwhelmed by the process? Or you're in the midst of a divorce and not sure what to do next? Well, we have the answer for you. The Second Saturday Divorce Workshop. Explore the legal, financial, and emotional aspects of divorce. Discover community resources available to help you. Talk with others experiencing similar life changes. Learn from the experts who have guided others through divorce. Divorce educational and informational workshops are held at Ventura College of Law, 4475 Market Street in Ventura, on the second Saturday of each month from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Register by calling 805-372-1810. That's 805-372-1810. Or email us at secondsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. That's 2ndsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. Call 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810. Please do not phone the law school. Registration is through our Second Saturday website. We look forward to answering your questions.
Lisa, the Second Saturday that we've just heard about, you are at those Second Saturdays.
I'm one of the instructors.
That's coming up next Saturday, isn't it?
It is.
Right, February the 8th.
Please join us.
Okay, I will. I promise.
Okay.
My question to you is that spousal support, does that come up in the Second Saturday workshops that you have?
Just as we're reviewing spousal support here, you know, we generally go through and talk about the court process and out-of-court processes. That includes a review of child support and spousal support and fees and all kinds of other topics that are interesting.
Excellent.
For consumers.
So
yeah.
A very, very useful workshop, right?
I think so.
Okay.
Wouldn't do it otherwise.
Right. You were going to add something before we went into the break.
Right. I was thinking about what Sharon was saying, and I had come across some materials from the American Academy of Matrimony Lawyers, because they did, they deployed a commission to review spousal support and looked at the different approaches to support used by a lot of the jurisdictions that we've been talking about. And after reviewing all of the different jurisdictional approaches to spousal support, they actually designed a formula that reaches a result which is very comparable to majority of the jurisdictions. And what the American Academy formula suggested was, and this was back, I think, in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, that alimony should be calculated as follows, that it would equal 30% of the payor's gross income minus 20% of the payee's gross income, which is different from the formula mm-hmm. I talked about before, which was 40% minus 50% for our temporary guideline. But they said that this is just a starting point. I don't think this was meant to be encapsulated in some, you know, software program and this be the be-all and end-all, because so let me just repeat that again. So the formula would be 30% of payor's gross minus 20% of the recipient's gross, with the payees or the recipient's total income, including alimony, not to exceed 40% of the combined income of the parties. But then the figure would be adjusted for deviation factors, which is kind of, again, going back to what the Family Code 4320 section does when it requires us to balance. So their deviation factors, similar to Family Code 4320, would be that if a spouse is the primary caretaker of dependent children or disabled adult child, if a spouse has pre-existing court-ordered support obligations, if they're complying with court-ordered payment of debts, including, you know, unreimbursed medical expenses, they would look at whether a spouse has unusual needs, the ages or the health, whether the spouse had given up a career or otherwise supported the career of the other spouse, whether a spouse had received a disproportionate share of the marital estate. Now, generally, that's not going to be the case in California because of community property laws. There are unusual tax consequences. That would be a deviation factor, and other circumstances that would make the considerations inequitable, the application of these factors inequitable. So those are some of the suggestions that the American Academies Commission came up with back in 2008, which is consistent with what some of the other jurisdictions are doing. And they also had a durational component, which was subject to the deviation factors, meaning how long it lasts is going to depend on some of those factors that we talked about. But then they did say that it would be calculated, alimony shall be paid for a number of years calculated by multiplying the length of the marriage by the following durational factors. So if it's a marriage of 0 to 3 years, it would be 30% of the length. If for a marriage of 3 to 10, it would be 50%. If it was a marriage of 10 to 20 years in length, it would be 75%. Or for marriages of 20 years or more, it would be permanent. And then they gave some samples of those computations. And the reason I point that out is because they did a very comprehensive study and looked at all of these different formulas and some of the ones even that Sharon was talking about, some of those states' formulas as well.
Which also reminds me of the Idaho Supreme Court Justice Shepard, who said, "The question facing the court is whether a judicially imposed system of involuntary servitude is to be continued wherein one human being is placed in bondage to another for what is effectively the remainder of his natural life."
Involuntary servitude. Interesting terminology.
Spousal support.
You and Steve were having a bit of a discussion during the break. Would you like to share that with us, Steve?
Well, I made the mistake of saying that the woman should get something in that Massachusetts thing you were talking about. My goodness, what's going on? Doesn't she deserve something and still have her dignity?
Well, this was a particular story about one person, and women should, yes, if fair, be fair. But a lot of women, unfortunately, are not fair. And I think the emotion comes in whether a mental health professional is really vital. And this particular woman couldn't stand going back to court and having to spend the money and having to go through the trauma. And she just said, "Just give me my maiden name back and I'm done." And she went out, she started off, she rebuilt herself, she took a low-paying job, and she worked her way up, and she said, "I did it all by myself. My ex-husband was not my financial plan. I was my financial plan, and I was my future."
And I will agree with you on that sentiment. That's an important thing. And it's nice to hear a woman talk about a woman being vindictive. This is good stuff.
I think it's a matter of a woman being strong and moving on with her life, right? Although she may just be entitled to spousal support anyway.
Right. Regardless of the motivations, it's possible that she has a legal entitlement. So we can strip the emotions out of it and the court's going to do what the court's going to do.
Yes.
But I do think that people, you know, need to make sure that they're tracking emotionally and that they're getting support through a divorce, because sometimes they get stuck on some of these issues.
And this particular lady who did go to court was entitled to spousal support, but it was going to be such a battle and it was going to be so much money, she's just decided to walk away for the sake of peace.
Well, everybody's entitled to make a decision that's personally, you know,
and I admire
a good
her for
fit.
That.
Yeah, for themselves. And they should do so in conjunction sometimes with the mental health professional, because they have to make sure that they're committed to that, because it is a sacrifice too, to give up those types of financial assistance.
When you receive a call from a prospective client and they want to waive spousal support, what is your advice?
You mean in a prenup generally,
yes,
is when
yes,
we would get that sort of inquiry. We generally won't be involved in drafting or reviewing prenups if there's a spousal support waiver. First of all, there's a general concern under the law about enforcing waivers. And in a recent case called Factor, Marriage of Factor, I think it was 2013, the court found that wives having waived alimony, it was not valid. It's not invalid, rather. Let me restate that as a matter of law, but it was unconscionable as applied at the time of the divorce. I think there the husband was a Harvard lawyer and she was working maybe for Nordstrom or something along those lines. And in any event, I think after the Factor case, there's a question about whether there's a weakening of the enforceability of spousal support waivers. And generally, Sharon and I, Sharon, maybe you want to pipe in here, there are lots of reasons why we discourage clients from executing those waivers.
Yes, I mean, if you come in at 25, you're young and in love, and you can't wait to get married, and you've got this beautiful wedding plan, you've got this wonderful designer dress, and you're willing to sign everything away because you're so happy. But when you're 25 and when you're 40, there's a vast difference, and you're much wiser at 40, and who knows what you've experienced. And signing something away at 25, you can't possibly know what's going to be like at 40.
A lot of people get offended when they say, you know, I want a prenup, or I don't want a prenup, and I want this as a waiver. We haven't even got married yet, and you're looking at these stumbling blocks in the marriage.
Well, a prenup in general is an opportunity to negotiate some rules and agreements around your relationship, whether it's just financial agreements or understandings about what's going to happen if we have children and raise them together. What if I stay home and sacrifice a career to do this? What are the expectations? And usually I find most people come to me for prenuptial agreements because they have separate property that they're looking to protect and separate businesses, and they're pretty substantial, and they're concerned about what happens if there are later claims in the marital dissolution proceeding and claims that, you know, for example, let's just say it's husband who's coming to me for the prenup, stereotypically, we'll be stereotypical for a second, I am concerned, what if my wife works as a receptionist in the office? What if she spends some hours helping me pick out the next commercial building where I'm going to have my my tower and put house my 10,000 employees? Is she now acquiring an interest in my business, and to what extent? So you really can dilute,
yes,
your interest in a business through a very long marriage.
Do you have his telephone number? I'd like to go and work for him.
Oh, absolutely. Let me get that to you off air.
Now, let's get to dirty tricks for a second. I'm sure there are lots of dirty tricks that spouses get up to. Litigants play out there in the family courts when it comes to spousal support. Would you care to share some of these dirty tricks with us, ladies?
I basically, I don't know of any of these from any personal experience of any of my clients.
Of course.
But
not.
I studied this purely in an academic environment.
We understand that.
And I'm
that.
Not ever going to recommend to any clients, actually, that they do any of these things. Of course not. Because they will probably end up sanctioned and in big trouble with the judges. But I did attend, I told you, in Beverly Hills, an American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers seminar a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
And there were some materials there called My Smoke, Your Mirrors. And they presented a list of dirty tricks, some of which I had never even thought about before until I got educated.
You're going to give our listeners some tips now, right?
Oh, not tips to follow, tips to avoid.
Yes.
But things to look for, actually, because if you hire a CPA during your divorce and you are looking to make sure that you're getting a fair division of property or a fair interest, marital interest in a business, you do need to be looking out for some of these things. So if a divorce planning payor believes that the court's going to base support on cash flow for the last 12 months instead of recurring net income, they might play some tricks and move some money around and accelerate expenditure transactions for the purpose of temporarily reducing the cash flow. And they're going to do that through all kinds of financial manipulation. So here's just a short list of things that I learned at the seminar, and some of them I've seen, obviously, by experience in cases. But they will accelerate debt payments. So they're going to pay off large amounts of debt or lines of credit, and then they're going to have less cash to distribute to the owners. So you may not have income for support purposes, but query, aren't you going to have a business worth more at the end of the day? So, you know, again, is that going to backfire? Another dirty trick would be accelerating the purchase of capital assets. So, for example, here you have a manipulative payor who's looking to avoid and dodge a spousal support obligation or a child support obligation, and they spend money buying long-term assets during the period right before the support hearing. And again, the result is that the entity, the business, is going to have lower cash flow to distribute to the payor, the partners, so that that person can immediately access and pay support because they've reinvested it into the business, which is now acquiring assets. Well, this happened in one case, actually, that I'm aware of recently, that we saw the payor purchasing lots of farmland right before the support hearing, and the CPA was kind enough and sharp enough to point it out to us. And also, all of a sudden, with the purchase of farm equipment, there were planes and all kinds of other things being purchased, and the timing was really suspect. And the good thing is, if you have a forensic accountant on board during your divorce proceeding, they'll be looking for these types of things. But also, as an educated and informed consumer, you need to point these things out if you see sudden business moves that are not consistent with things you've been seeing during the marriage. So I can, you know, give you just a few other items. For example, you could be accelerating payments to vendors. Again, it strips you of some cash and income to pay support for child and spousal support. But again, you know, will that puts you in a better position in terms of the business? Deferring collection of account receivables. So if you're a manipulative support payor and you tell your customers, hold off on payment just to reduce your cash flow, that's another vindictive trick that can be played. Sharon?
Oh, and just then from the other side, unfortunately, a couple of cases too that in my experience where typically the wife gets the house or the Tuscan villa, as it were, and then rents out a couple of rooms to some people who live there, and they pay her in cash, and she doesn't get any income. So that's hiding money that she's receiving. And then also...
and that's the recipient playing the game. Now, we were
exactly
talking about the payor who's obligated to pay support. So yes, it does go both ways.
And then, of course, the spousal support is supposed to be the needs, not the wants. And most of the time, it's most definitely the ones. And I think, Steve, that's where you come in, budgeting with the spouse in terms of wants and needs.
Absolutely. And this is, again, why I think a financial advisor should be in or part of the process of this whole thing, to work with different ones. And another dirty trick, and of course, this doesn't have to do with spousal support, but it has to do with the division of assets. Very often, there's a brokerage statement with a bunch of stocks, and the husband will say, well, I want these. You should take these because they have better growth potential.
Yes.
And he knows that they're garbage. So an advisor should be part of the process to give input to protect both sides.
I agree. And I think also just one thing on what Sharon said, the income and expense form that people fill out, both clients fill them out, the one who's paying support and the one who's receiving it. The numbers in terms of expenses can, you know, people do tend to inflate those and fluff them, but the judges are also pretty savvy to that.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KBTA.
Need a lawyer? The Ventura County Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service is a state bar certified referral service dedicated to finding you the right lawyer. The County Bar Association is a non-profit corporation providing this referral program as a public service, which meets the American Bar Association standards. If you need legal help, the LRIS can place you in touch with a qualified lawyer who will assist you with your problem for a reasonable fee of $35 for a 30-minute consultation. Call the experienced professional staff at the County Bar Association at 805-650-7599, 805-650-7599, or email bar@vcba.org. The right call for the right lawyer. The Lawyer Referral and Information Service, 805-650-7599.
We're on Twitter and Facebook, and I'd like to read three posts on the Facebook as far as the show is concerned. Somebody has written, I think spousal support should not be an option. You should be earning your own living. Another post is, when I divorced my first husband, he said if I asked for child support for our twins, he'd ask for spousal support. How ridiculous is that? And this is the quote. They should work it out if they can't afford to be by themselves. Interesting posts. Tom, you had a question for Lisa.
This was just a question that was more directed at the kids, because I have a very close friend who had this happen. And it's twofold. One, divorce happened. A few years later, one kid decides to get into hockey. Now, hockey as a sport is incredibly expensive, and that will flip your finances and what one would be expecting to pay. The other one was college. One wanted to go to a JC. The other wanted to go to a private school. Again, we're dealing with $5,000 and $10,000 to $20,000 a year. So how do we deal with that? This caused bitterness on high.
So I think generally it's going to depend as to the college age support. If this were a California agreement, there is no requirement to pay college age support. It stops, you know, at 18 or until a child is, you know, emancipated, graduates high school or emancipated. So if it's college age support, it could be by agreement, and then it would be subject to the terms of the couple's agreement. If it comes to hockey and it's a minor child, then and they're divorced, then generally it's going to be, again, dependent on the terms of their agreement. If it says that you have to get consent of the other spouse to enroll in an extracurricular activity, then it may end up in court if they don't reach agreement on it. And I think they should be really sensitive, though, to the wants and needs of the child. If a child's really had a long-term career in hockey, it's something that they should seriously consider investing in.
My tip is to try a soccer or football, as they call it in other countries.
Yeah. Well, that could be horseback
riding. Well, cricket.
You know?
Yeah,
cricket.
Get a pull up.
Rugby.
We've got 30 seconds. If I may ask Steve, I'd like to continue this, perhaps if we have some time next week. But I'd like to ask Steve, what happened to the stock market this week?
Oh, my
week?
Goodness. It's
just
not a
30
was,
seconds.
This would not be a good week to get a divorce, right? Well, look, emerging market problems, currency issues causing jitters here in the United States of America, and a great excuse to sell off a market that's too high. It needs a correction. Everything will be okay after that.
Emerging markets such as Turkey, Argentina, yes. South Africa,
as well. Right, absolutely.
And Brazil.
And Brazil, right. Yeah. Big problems in a lot of these emerging markets. Solvable problems, but temporary, and that's causing a lot of worry.
What about the threat of an abrupt slowdown in China? Doesn't that have
China's influence? Got so much money, it's not even funny. They will manufacture a speed up.
And we owe them most of that money, right?
Indeed.
Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, same station on AM 1590. KVTA, have a great week.
Tune in every Saturday at 3 p.m. for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle.
This radio programming is not intended to encourage anyone to seek a divorce. The producers assume that callers are seeking basic information. The radio program is intended to be an informational format and does not constitute legal advice. Anyone with legal, mental health, financial, or other professional questions is directed to retain a competent professional after carefully interviewing qualified professionals. A guest appearance by a particular panelist does not constitute a specific recommendation by the producers as to the expertise of that professional, nor does that panelist's views necessarily reflect the views of the producer.
Are you rocking?
We're News Talk 1590
KVTA.
So simple, yet so complex.
Ventura, Camarillo,
Santa Barbara.